Hey, it's Greg Gutfeld. This is The One. At this point, you would hear really amazing music, but I'm hearing it in my head. I'm with one of the classic Red Eye legends, probably by one of my top five favorite guests on Red Eye, Dr. Michael Bodden, who we used to call Dr. Death, and he had his own segment, and I would just pepper him with all sorts of questions. And those were good times, wasn't that?
They were great. At 3 o'clock in the morning, it was wonderful. Yes. It was like talking to each other.
Exactly. Yes, I always you know how I am. I'm obsessed with death, I'm always curious about your line of work because you are your medical examiner, probably with one of the most famous of all time, I would say, right?
Yeah, in the old days they didn't have internet and
yes,
social media, but now that social media is around, we get known more.
Yeah, you know, but your clients are all dead, so you don't get it's not like Yelp where people can give you a good rating. Like you can't say, "Hey, Dr. Bodden did a great autopsy."
Oh no. The clients,
yes,
are fine. They don't argue and they stay still for photos, and they,
yes,
don't cut there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the people related to the clients,
right, that's true,
that can say a lot of things. And when I was medical examiner in New York, they had no problem if they wanted to complain to the mayor or other people.
Yes.
The one thing that people don't understand, dead people must be terrible.
Mm.
Dead people are out of their pain. It's,
right.
When I was at Bellevue Hospital as an intern and resident treating people dying of cancer,
mm-hmm,
those were the difficult cases.
I can imagine. Yeah. I mean, we've all experienced that in our families. It's
the process
horrible.
Of dying that's so terrible.
And I hate thinking about it, but I find myself thinking about it all the time. And maybe it's like there was a point in life where you don't see it coming, but then you reach a certain point in your life where you can actually realize there's less time here than you have behind you. So it's basically downhill. You can see the
– just tell me about it. Yes.
Yeah.
I know for a young fellow, you know an awful about – a lot about what's coming in the future.
Yes. I think about it too much. So how – okay. This is a good question. How do you approach – philosophically, psychologically, your mortality, when you yourself are surrounded by death every day? I don't even know how many bodies you've opened up. I'm sure it's thousands.
Yes.
So you know how fragile the human body is and how the human body can die in so many different ways. How do you leave your house?
You know, you're very good. I mean, people come and say, can you tell what so-and-so died?
Mm-hmm.
And we do the autopsy, and you see so many things that may have gone wrong, can go wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And what affects us is how do they live for so long with all of these abnormal conditions in the body? So the human body is amazing, and when one part goes bad, other parts often will take over.
That's amazing to me because I think about like an automobile. There are all these parts working, and like your car can just break down, but you know, you get a part. But the human body has all of these parts, and it's amazing that they're all working.
Yeah, that's right. For me, who believes that the body is made of molecules and over millions of years got, mm-mm, developed, how all the nerves, blood vessels got hooked up to every cell in the body, every muscle cell, the heart, the brain, is just amazing what randomness could do is one way of looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
And only over the billions of years that we came to be. But even we have built-in redundancies.
Right.
Like we have two kidneys. If one kidney goes bad, the other kidney will take over and enlarge. If one lung goes bad, the same thing.
Okay, this leads me to a fundamental flaw in the human body. How come we don't have two hearts?
Well, that's the heart and the brain.
Yes, we should have two brains and two hearts. I think I have two brains.
Well, we have a left side and a right side.
Yes.
And your brain, you know, if I were a neuroscientist, I'd love to analyze your brain. You must you'd make PET scans go crazy.
I have a – well, you know what's weird? I do think that our brain – like I think I think so many thoughts. Who am I thinking them to? Do you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah. Suddenly they'll appear. But yeah. That's what I'm saying about your brain in particular. is that in listening to you and knowing you for so long, you can associate things and talk about things that associates millions of neurons in the brain all at once that very few people can do, really. I mean, we can plot along, but some people, the left side, the right side, the front and back of the brain works faster than others.
Yeah, I think a lot of my brain power is devoted to certain things, and then it ignores completely other things. You know, it's like I have no mechanical abilities. My brother-in-law visited me about a month ago, and like he just walks around my apartment and fixes stuff. He looks at something and he goes, "Hey, Gutfeld, why isn't this air conditioning working?" And then he fiddles with it because he's an engineer.
Right.
He like just fiddles with it, and then he goes and he looks at. While I'm in the shower, he goes, "Hey, I fixed your barbecue." These are things that I look at, and my brain doesn't tell me anything. My brain doesn't say, here's what's wrong with the barbecue. Why is it? But yet my brain can come up with ridiculous concepts for hours that are of no use to anybody.
Well, that is interesting. And part of it is that we tend to – the parts of the brain we use tend to be more empowered and we have more information. Mm-hmm. But genetics is a big important. People are born with different kinds of – abilities built in, right hand, left hand.
Yeah.
Einstein did very poorly in school.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever his brain was doing, he didn't do well in his early school days.
Yeah. He also had crazy hair. I have a theory that crazy hair either means you're brilliant or crazy. I don't know. You know, so how do you keep – back to my original question, like – when you look at mortality, do you think something happens after? Do you think that there's a place that you go or I have a theory, but I want to hear what you feel.
A qualified no.
Yeah.
No, nothing happens after, except as Shakespeare has it in one of his plays, as we break down, as our body breaks down, and we eventually all the cells in our bodies and all the oxygen and carbon and other elements will then leach out of our bodies, go into the atmosphere, and be picked up by other people. Where my carbon or my hydrogen or my oxygen coming out of my body gets inhaled or incorporated into a newborn baby.
Yeah.
And doesn't even know I donated it.
But yeah, and the thing is that is ultimately selfless, but the what we think about as afterlife, we talk about heaven and things, we're talking about our consciousness. We just want to be conscious. And if you are reabsorbed into the earth, you may not have a consciousness, so it's death.
Yeah, but you see, it's also people want to believe in religion. Gives us that there's a purpose to life.
Right.
Now, the purposes can be to do good. Mm-hmm. The purposes can be to do bad. The purposes can be to get to heaven and get, 70 virgins or something.
Yeah.
But
I wouldn't want that.
I was enthralled when I was a kid that of Jupiter and Zeus and all of the Roman and Greek gods.
Yes.
And then I was told as I grew up that, however, in my case, Judaism has a single God.
Right.
And somehow say, single God is better than tons of gods. But then as I got older, I thought, why is one God better than a whole bunch of gods?
Yeah, no, I was thinking about too, because theoretically, maybe it would make more sense to have more gods, because if you believe in one God, then that means the other gods that other people believe in are wrong, which kind of means that you're probably wrong too. Because if I say, no, it's a Christian God, no, it's a Muslim God, it's like, well, why can't they just all be together up there somewhere or down there or to the side? Because frankly, we're floating in space. There is no real up or down at this point. I had a theory that because when you go to sleep, you have no concept of time. You're out. And then you wake up, it's the morning. If you die, you lose that dimension of time. So in all probability, you will reemerge with it, your consciousness. It could be a billion years from now, 3 billion years from now, but you won't know because it'll happen instantaneously the moment you die. The moment you die, you go into this permanent sleep, but it's not really permanent. It's just like there will be a probability in this time going forward that your consciousness, just by the sheer mathematics, as time goes on, your consciousness will emerge just in probability because of parallel universes and whatnot.
Even in non-parallel.
Yeah.
If the billions of years it took to make a Greg Gutfield, right, or to make me, then we disintegrate when we die. One way or another, we're going to disintegrate. Then in the next billions of years,
yes,
why couldn't their molecules get – I had a thing when I was in college that – I remember thinking about certain things, that if you had 1,000 monkeys,
right,
tapping on a typewriter,
yeah,
at some point in the billions of trillions of years, they'd come up with the Declaration of Independence.
They would, and that's the point. And it's almost a certainty that it would, because if you have an endless amount of time, every possibility could happen. In fact, it's like there are people that use the same idea with parallel universes. That because there's an infinite number of parallel universes, somewhere I am you and you were me. Or, I get hit by a car on one day, but on another day I'm president of the United States, because there's just an endless amount of universes.
That would make sense if you believe in that.
No, I know. And I know that people at home are thinking that we're high, but we're not. They're mathematicians who write books on this stuff. There's a great book by Max Tegmark on I think it's called Mathematical Universe, if I believe. And it's basically about the probability of parallel universes and the fact that it's also kind of linked to quantum physics, quantum mechanics. The fact that a molecule or a substance can be in more than one place at once, which is like freaky and weird. And I don't understand it, but I'm too stupid to get this stuff. But I just understand enough of it to talk about it. And then confuse myself.
And these theories, these theories,
yeah,
that have only been developing 100 years in the early 1900s.
Mm-hmm.
It was a revolution for Einstein's theories.
Yeah.
But now there's so many additional theories, and things are going so quickly. It's
yes.
like the more we learn, the faster we learn more.
Right.
So that in the next 50 years, we're going to know an awful lot more than we know now.
Now that leads to my next question. I want to be around for that. So there's a couple of possibilities that I've been thinking about. Silicon Valley billionaires, they're trying to figure out a way to live longer because they've made all their money and they're 30. And they're going like, I don't want to die. So you hear about putting your brain in a nutrient vat. Like that's because the human body ultimately fails. But if you can somehow preserve the brain in a nutrient vat, like you're essentially uploading yourself, or maybe you're downloading yourself. You could live like a computer program in a cloud or something like that. Like your brain is in a vat, but you're living in the world. Does that make – have you heard?
Well, there have been some science fiction, even movies about this,
yeah,
that theoretically if you – your being is really in your brain. So
yeah,
when you die, the brain is taken out and kept alive.
Right.
And over time, it could be transplanted like a kidney transplant or a liver transplant, which cannot be done now. But theoretically, there'll come a time – like we do heart transplants now. 30 years ago was ridiculous.
Yes.
Now it's common to do heart transplants. The one thing we haven't is the brain, because it got so many wires. But that'll be overcome at some time.
It will. Because, you think about how many people survive from bullet injuries now that didn't 30 years ago. That's why we have a reduction in murder.
You're like, absolutely right.
Yeah, it's like that's people wouldn't. You died when you got shot. Now you don't.
Yeah, that is everybody. The murder rate has come down so much, and they say better police work, better this. People don't take into effect. And I see in the old days, so many people died that wouldn't die now. That especially stabbing and New York City, we don't have guns, so we have mostly stabbing murders.
Yeah.
And people who died in the 1970s, 1980s would be alive now. So they're changing. Medicine's changed murders into assaults.
Right.
And the murder rate goes down.
It's
and the solve rate doesn't. But, you know, the solve rate doesn't because the solve rate used to be about 85%. Now it's about 45%. Oof. Of murders, and that's partly because the stab ones, the home murders, husband, wives, family, which are so common, they were easily solved.
Right.
Now those murders, those stab ones, they go to the hospital, do a CAT scan, and they're the low-hanging fruit that get treated and survive, whereas the stranger murders in those days and today still don't get solved.
I see. So that lowered, that affects the rate.
The rate, so that the easy solved ones get medical treatment, and the numbers of murders go down, and the solve rate also goes down.
It really is deceptive because we've been operating under this assumption that we're becoming a less violent society, when in fact we're just better at solving the injuries violence.
That's
so we could still be just as violent. We could be even more violent. Like in Chicago, if the shooting rate at Chicago existed now the way it did in the 70s, God knows. I don't know. It could be
much higher.
Much higher. But, you know, I want to go back to the other point that, like, transplants. See, I think overcoming the challenge of a brain transplant is not wanting to be transplanted, but being placed into a vat. Like, I don't want to have another body. I don't want to be on a donkey. I don't want to be on a cat. I just want to be in a vat. And then all you do is you put me in a vat with nutrients. And you could actually, if you're good at it, you could just pleasure me to infinity by touching parts of my brain.
That is true. That could be done now. Right now,
yes.
They put people under anesthesia and touch brains.
See?
And we get from all the new technologies, we know which parts of the brain to touch.
Yes.
And
I tell you, this is it. This is how you solve mortality, is brain in a vat. And you could, like, if they found the part of your brain that, like, is for orgasm or for cocaine, all you'd have to do is somebody just has to come in and just sit there. Like, they could just place something there 24 hours a day for the rest of your life. You could have a cocaine high or an orgasm, and you will never need anything else. It's probably depressing.
Well, that's theoretically what you're saying could happen, but you'd have to have people pointing the right spot.
Well, that's what we'd hire. That would be the hired help.
Because these are one of the billionaires who has a trust fund that will pay everybody.
Exactly. And then the thing is, if you do it for, like, if you do it for 20 years for one person, then someone will do it for you. It's like a pay it forward kind of thing. Like if I massage your brain and then for a while, and then I have – it's like a daisy chain of immortality. Have you followed – The hypothesis, the simulation hypothesis. I always ask people this. It's a theory that's based on that we are post-human, that we are, like, actually simulations of humans from before, because we figured out how to do what I was talking about, and we're just like a video game. Has that ever crossed your – I probably didn't explain it very well.
No, I hear what you say. No, I've never thought of that, but what I did think of as my ute is that we have a sun with nine – in those days, you used to have nine planets.
Right.
And that would be part of a molecule, that all of us are part of molecules in a huge, giant person.
Yes.
The whole solar system is made up of sun with electron, electrons being the
it's entirely possible.
Planets.
It's entirely possible that we're just, like, you know, you think about it, like when they when you see construction being done on a freeway, there's like an anthill down there, and the anthill doesn't even know that there's this construction going on. That's the way it could be with us. You know, we could just be the anthill, and there's all this construction. At any moment, that stupid, like, giant front end loader could just run right over us, and we're gone. But it'll take in our time frame, it could be a trillion years. But for that giant beast,
and then later on, we'd call it a meteorite hit us. But it's really,
exactly. It would be a meteorite. Maybe I have one last question. How much? of my present day right now, how much of my body could exist for me to remain alive? Like, if I had the vat right now, if I, like, would you just need my brain and like an artery to the heart? Would that all it was like that? Would that be it?
Well, if you had the brain, you made the hypothesis in a nutrient solution.
Yeah.
Which would have oxygen and
yeah.
foodstuffs and all that. Theoretically, you can devise something that keeps the brain alive. But even now, in transplants, mm-hmm. when we take the kidney from one person to put in another, it has to be kept alive before it's transferred, maybe somebody even in another state. So they have, you know, coldness, it cuts down the metabolism, yeah. but they can put in various nutrients. But the feelings part of it is our brain.
Yeah.
So that the knowledge is around now that they could keep hearts and lungs and brain alive, but in separate means, as much as that might or might not be permitted from a research point of view.
Yeah. What is the ideal way to die? You always hear they died in their sleep.
Yes.
But that could be painful too. You wake up and have a heart attack. No one saw it. Oh, they died in their sleep.
But it'd be next to your wife.
Yeah.
Who would, if you're having a heart attack, she'd say, go to sleep.
Yeah, yes.
But a lot of people have heart attacks, and that's the way I'd like to go. I have a heart attack in my sleep.
Yeah.
And even and donate my body to some school that people can learn from me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mind that at all.
Yes. You will now be the carved, not the carver.
The carvee.
Yeah, you're the carvee, not the carved. That'll be fun. Is anything special coming up, Dr. Bodden, you want to plug? Are you going to be doing something? You got a book? You got a thing? A TV special? You're always doing something interesting.
We're doing a few things on Fox, but in process. But
gotcha.
As far as I have a book at a publisher, but it hasn't been gone through yet.
What is the topic? Anything you can speak of, or is it you can't talk about it?
I can't really talk about it. Thank you.
All right. Is it about OJ?
It's not about OJ.
Okay.
It's about how forensic pathologists, are interested only in the science, not who gets on, not in the outcome of a legal trial, but the science, the testimony of a French pathologist should be the same whether he's called on by the prosecution or the defense, period. The science is science. Now, how it's interpreted by a jury is something else.
Gotcha. I miss our days on Red Eye. We had such fun on that show,
that was
didn't we?
Fun. It's something about being able to talk at 3 a.m. and knowing that anybody who's up listening isn't going to be offended by anything we say.
Oh, my God. I know we got to go because I've kept you on for 25 minutes. The story, I'll never forget this. I got in so much trouble in England. Do you remember this story? I had you on and I was interviewing you about necrophilia, people who have sex with the dead. And we were talking about the statistics amongst coroners and stuff and all this.
Right.
And it was
Yeah.
So Red Eye is on in the morning in Saturday. It was like – it's
breakfast.
On, yeah, breakfast time. They got so many – they didn't get a lot of complaints, but it's called Oxcom or Ox – their FCC – got a complaint about it, and you know what they did? I had to write a letter to a woman in Kent, like an elderly woman, to explain what our show is and that I thought this was an informative topic. And Fox has decided to pull Red Eye. It's just like, just take it off, take it off out of England. They did, so that's why we're not in England anymore. They were like, it was all because of a 4-minute segment on necrophilia. There you go, a little trivia for Red Eye Red Eye fans out there.
I must say, I came in here so enthused about seeing you after quite a while, and now I have to leave feeling guilty.
No, that's my fault. I love those. I love topics like that, and so I was just. And you just play ball with me. You will answer every question. That's why I love you, Dr. Bodden.
I love you, Greg.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.